You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, folks, we've got a hot one tonight for you. Art Bell did it again. Yep. Old Art Bullshit Bell did it again. Mass hysteria erupted again across the nation late last Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, after Art Bell interviewed one William Thomas on Art Bell Overnight. Thomas is the major figure pushing the jet contrails are killing us hoax. During the broadcast, William Thomas revealed that a man named Joe Burton was sprayed and has allegedly been diagnosed with, listen to this, folks, I can't even pronounce all of these things, hepatitis A, rabies, that's right, I said rabies, Epstein-Barr, flu 83, V2 gripe, N-T-BOC-L-methanol-L-leucol-phenylalanylamine-dimethylglycine-hydrochloride-trifluoronitrosomethane-and-yep-folks-even-turpentine. Can you believe this? I just love it. Now, you see, if all that were all true, rabies? Rabies? For God's sake, rabies! Yeah, he hasn't bit anybody yet that I know of, but he got rabies. And you're going to be amazed at where he got these things from. Rabies? If all that were true, folks, old Joe would most probably be dead. Now, we all know that, don't we? Old Joe would most probably be dead. Our investigation demonstrates that Joe Burton is an extremely dangerous, paranoid, racist nut. That's right. You heard me correctly. You see, he claims that he contracted all of these diseases and chemicals and things from jet plane contrails. Yeah, those little lines that you see in the sky. He constantly raves on Usenet about his exploits, which usually means they occur only in his wildest dreams. And Thomas, William Thomas, with a malfunctioning bullshit filter, accepts anything that supports his contrail hoax. And old Art B.S. Bell picked up the ball, as usual, and blabbed it all over the worldwide radio before checking to see if there is any factual basis for the story, and in the process promoted the insane ravings of a well-known racist nut. Bullshit, lies, and disinformation have become Art Bell's stock in trade. You all know that. It's incredible what's flying across this country, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be talking about that tonight. We have a special guest. My good friend Jay Reynolds is going to be our guest tonight. He called me. Well, he had been sending me things on contrails for a long time in email. And then we talked, and I persuaded him to do a story for Veritas based upon his research. And many of you that have received Veritas have read the story. Well, there's an updated version that's posted on the internet on our website, harvest-trust.org. Harvest-trust.org. If you'll go to the homepage, you'll see this Art Bell Did It Again story, and at the bottom of that story is a link to those mysterious lines in the sky, which is all of the research, facts, documentation, and sources for the truth about jet contrails and what they're really doing, and of course, what they're not doing. And mostly, they're not doing much at all, which is the case for just about most things that fly aground in the so-called, quote, patriot, end quote, community. Because of all the wackos who call themselves patriots, you know, I hesitate to even use that name anymore. Just like, although I believe in the teachings of Jesus, I hate to call myself a Christian because of all of the wacko nuts out there that call themselves Christians. I don't want to be associated with any of them. Most of them are nuttier than any fruitcake that I've ever seen on any Christmas table. Be that as it may, there is so much disinformation, so many lies, so many con jobs going concerning these contrails that even though the story's printed in Veritas, I decided to do a broadcast tonight and just cover this subject thoroughly. Put it to bed, so to speak. So if you're one of these wacky Looney Tune nuts that have been running around at the sky is falling, contrails are killing us, we're all dying, the hospitals are packed wall to wall, I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to make you look like the idiot that you are. I don't care who you are. I don't care how good your intentions are. If you're one of these wacko idiot creeps that hurt us all by taking every rumor that crosses between the airspace between your ears and passes it on without ever checking it out or doing one single little bit of inquisitive work to try to ascertain the truth of it, then, buddy, you ain't no friend of mine. You're not part of the solution. You are a major part of the problem. And when I say major, I mean major. And somehow, we've got to make you stop it. And if the only way to do that is just embarrass the holy hell out of you, that's exactly what we'll do. And we'll start doing it tonight. So folks, hang on to your hats. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Later on, we'll be taking your calls.
She packed my bag last night, we played. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss you love so much. I miss my wife. I'm not the man that I am at home. I'm not the man. like cold as hell. And there's no one there to raise them if you need.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've already stirred up a hornet's nest. Had one of the nuts that's been spreading the rumor called, and he identified himself exactly in that manner. He said, "I'm one of the nuts that's been spreading this." I said, "Good night, nut," and hung up because the phones aren't open. I thought it might be Jay. Well, a few minutes later, a woman called. And I don't know what she wanted to talk about because I told her I wasn't taking calls right now and hung up. And then a few minutes later, another nut called up and threatened me. So you see, when I said we're going to stir up a hornet's nest, I wasn't kidding. And for all of you nuts out there, don't threaten me. If you think you've got the balls, you come and show up on my doorstep, and we'll just see what you're going to do besides jack your jaw. Because that's all that you ever do is jack your jaw. On the phone, we have Jay Reynolds, my good friend, longtime member of our news service, and a very thorough researcher. And that's how we became good friends. I just observed what he did and what he produced and what he said and found out that he's just like me. He likes the truth, not the con. Good evening, Jay. Welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are so the listening audience knows something about you to begin with?
Okay, well, I'm 44 years old, and I have studied engineering. I'm a marine engineer, and I have also been working quite a few years with gas turbine engines. And I'm also a farmer of sorts. And about 2 years ago, when the whole contrail story started, I heard someone say something about it, and it pricked my ears up. And when I saw something in print, I started looking a little deeper. And the more I looked, the more information I found, but a lot of the information I found was false, too.
Was what, Jay?
It was false. It was a lie.
Okay. Why don't we begin at the beginning? I mean, what did you find, and how did you find out that it was not true?
Well, an email message was sent, and that started, as far as I'm concerned, that's the first written record that I've been able to find on it.
And that was sent where?
It was sent to an email list. Some people may not know what that is, but that's where people exchange email and information and lies and rumors and etc.
You got that right. And what did this email message have to say?
Well, it said that the lines in the sky are identified. And it went on to say that there was an analysis that had been issued by a company. And it said that the analysis showed a dangerous pesticide was in jet fuels.
Was this the email from Richard Fink?
That's exactly who sent that. And it was in August of 97.
August of 97. Okay, I have the one from September 17th, 97. Okay. Let me read that. I'll read that on the air, and then you can talk about it.
I'll ask your listeners to tell me to think about this and if it sounds like an analysis or not.
Okay. It says, from Richard Fink, sent Wednesday, September 17th, 1997, 4:18 p.m. to biowar-l@mail.sonic.net, which is a mailing list on the Internet, concerning biowarfare. Subject, biowar, lines in the sky identified. Genocide on a wholesale lot. Lines in the sky are identified. Samples are analyzed. The lab director of Aquatech Environmental, aka Aquatel, Marion, Ohio, phone 707-887-2228. Using samples taken from JP-8 contaminated fields of Maryland and Pennsylvania, reported today, 9/18/97, that ethylene dibromide, otherwise known as EDB, has been the contaminant in the fuel and water samples taken of submitted by farmers, pilots, and tanker drivers. EDB is one of the most tightly controlled EPA substances and was banned in 1983 due to its carcinogenicity. EDB is a pesticide that apparently is being placed in the jet fuel and dispersed on a daily, almost non-stop basis in our skies. The lines filling our skies are not contrails. The lines are dispersed and may linger for hours, slowly filtering down to unsuspecting pests. And I guess we're the pests. Now, right off the bat, I got to tell you, there's something really wrong with this. This message was sent September 17th, 1997, and it reports today, September 18th, 1997, in the body of the message. And there are so many things wrong with this, it's pathetic, but go ahead, Jay.
Well, I'm glad you caught that. I've had several people look at it, and they didn't catch that.
Oh, that's my stock in trade, Jay. You know that. I'm a stickler for those things.
We always look for something which doesn't fit or something that doesn't ring true. And that starts off right off the beginning. But even before that, once I started looking at this, I called the phone number. And right off the bat, I noticed that the area code is California. It's not Ohio.
It's also the designation of a jet plane. This guy has a subtle sense of humor.
I know whose phone number it is, and I won't say who it is. I've called them, and they will hang up on you because it's a residence.
Yeah, and they're probably tired of having all the wackos call about the jet fuel killing people.
Well, one thing that's interesting, though, most of the ones
And you can...
It's fairly easy to do. It's on the internet several places.
Yes.
And when you get to the original one, you see a little bit more here. And so I contacted Aquatech Environmental, which is a company in Ohio. And they are tired of responding to this. Their policy is they do not give out any analysis that anybody has paid for without permission.
Sure, proprietary information.
Yeah. Now, in the first place, there's no analysis here. An analysis would show a percentage of parts per million or billion, and it would be much more complete. This is really just strictly, it's really a rumor.
Or more properly, intentional disinformation.
It's possible. And so eventually I did contact Richard Fink, and he told me, he sent me an email message which was very interesting. And basically he told me that it's not true.
Yeah.
He didn't use those words. He said that it's not accurate. Now that sounds like our president, doesn't it?
That sounds just like our president.
He said that it's not accurate. He also said, in a roundabout way, he threatened me.
Well, it might be the same guy that just called and threatened me then.
I don't know. He said that 7 men had died trying to get this information out.
Bullshit. That's a downright lie. That's an absolute lie. If 7 men have died, produce the death certificates, tell us who they are, and we'll research it out. We'll find out that it's just like all the rest of this stuff. It's a lie.
Well, I can make 2 conclusions from that if it were true. The first conclusion would be that Richard Fink is a superman who can survive when 7 others have died.
Yeah.
The second possibility is that Richard Fink was the one who did the killing.
Well, no killing has been done, I can assure you of that. Not over this. Because the whole thing is false. I mean, it's already been proven that there's absolutely nothing to it. There's no reason to kill anybody. Period. Am I correct?
Yes, because I do not believe that there is any ethylene dibromide in jet fuel.
And there's nobody has ever produced any analysis anywhere that says there is, have they?
No, they haven't. Now,
but they all run around claiming that all of these analyses have been made, but not one of these people can produce an analysis that you can track down to who did the analysis and confirm it, and they can't even produce one that you can't track down. They can't produce anything.
The only thing they produce is Richard Fink's email.
Yeah. Just like most of the things that fly around out there, that's, you know, when you track it down, it turns out to be some bogus rumor started by somebody in Podunk, Michigan, or Little Creek, Ohio, or Big Bear, Colorado, or something like that. And 9 times out of 10, you can't even find the person that started it, but you can usually prove that the information's false. We've discovered that about 99% of everything that's being passed around from hand to hand and whispered from mouth to ear is nothing but a pack of lies.
Well, you know, Bill, a good conspiracy rumor has to be built on a shred of truth.
Sure it does.
And that helps it to carry a lot better.
Yeah.
And the only shred of truth anywhere having to do with EDB, ethylene dibromide, is that it was, up until 1983, used in aviation gasoline for piston planes.
Well, that don't leave contrails.
Well, no, they can't leave contrails.
Well, sometimes they can under certain circumstances, but most contrails are left by jets.
Nowadays, there's not that many large high-altitude piston planes around.
Sure.
But I was able to find several beautiful pictures of B-17 bombers from World War II with contrails running for miles behind them.
Yeah, they can produce contrails under certain circumstances, but not as easily are as prolific as jet engines.
And I asked my father. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
He flew B-17s over Germany and Czechoslovakia in World War II, and he can remember the contrails.
I can remember seeing them as a boy when all the planes were piston engines, except for the first jets, which there were so few of them that they were only stationed at certain bases, and it was very rare that we ever saw them.
Well, anyway, there was EGB in airplane gas, but what most people don't realize is if they're old enough to have been alive in those days, that every time they were sitting in a traffic jam, they were breathing the exhaust from a car which used leaded gas that contained ethylene dichromide.
Yeah. Now, elaborate on that, because a lot of people are sitting there with a mouth down to their chest. They're thinking these planes that are flying at 50,000 feet, leaving a contrail, are poisoning them when they've already, you know, been in traffic exposed to much more of this chemical that they say that is poisoning the population than any jet contrail or aircraft contrail could ever present in the atmosphere that would ever reach the ground, that would ever even touch them.
Well, I'll elaborate and tell you the reason why everyone is not dead, even though the ethylene dichromide was used in fuels.
In particular, in aviation fuel for piston engines and gasoline that was used in every car in the nation. And if what these people are saying is true, then everybody who's ever walked down a street in New York City or driven in a busy city street should be dead by now.
Well, Bill, the reason why they're not is because ethylene dichromide breaks down with heat. Combustion of both of any kind of an engine is basically fire.
Sure.
And the ethylene dichromide, it oxidizes. That means it combines with oxygen and it breaks down, and basically you have a number of different compounds, which I'm not certain what they are, and they're not being put out now anyway. But that's most probably the reason why it didn't cause any problems. Now, it may have not been a good thing to use, and I'm just as happy that they don't have to use it. I was probably more concerned with the lead than I would have been with the ethylene dichromide.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they have built engines which can run on unleaded gasoline, and we don't use the ethylene dichromide anymore.
And is there any truth to their assertion that ethylene dichromide is in jet fuel?
Well, I checked that one out too, and I have to say that I was only able to find one person that could help me to run this down, and it was the developer of a jet fuel additive, Dr. Steve Zabarnik, PhD, from Dayton University Research Institute. And he wrote to me and told me that ethylene dichromide is not a component of this new fuel, JP8, and as far as I know, it has never been used in jet fuels. So that was the response that I can make. As far as I'm concerned, that should close the matter. And anyway, it is up to the person making the claim to document their claim.
Sure. And none of these people have documented anything yet. They're just spreading wild rumor.
As far as I've been able to see, that's the way it is.
Yeah. You know how I found out there was no ethyl bromide in jet fuel? Well, my father, I was reared in an Air Force family, and I know Air Force people all over the world. All my life was spent on Air Force bases with Air Force people. I was in the Air Force for 4 years. A lot of the people I served with didn't get out, but stayed in. I just called several of these people and asked them to go over to the jet shop on the base and get a list of the chemicals in the jet fuel, which they must have, because by law, the Environmental Protection Agency mandates it. And I asked them to read me off the list of the ingredients and additives in the jet fuel, of all the different jet fuels on the base, and they were a little perturbed that I wanted them to do that, but they did it. And guess what?
It's
not there. And if it was there, it would have to be listed by law. By federal law, it must be listed on the Environmental Protection Agency statement that must accompany all chemicals.
Well, there's one more problem with if they still contend that it must be in there. What about the people working on the ground at the airport? What about the families living next to the base?
Yeah, none of them are dying. None of them are dead. And I got to tell you, when I was in the Air Force, I felt sorry for those guys in the jet shop. Now, I was in the hydraulic shop. My specialty was hydraulics, which is pneumatics and hydraulics, high pressure air and fluids. And occasionally when I'd be working under a wing and I would be removing some portion of the hydraulic system, I would get drenched in hydraulic fluid. But hydraulic fluid wasn't nearly as bad to get drenched in as jet fuel was. And those guys that worked in the jet shop were constantly being soaked from head to toe with jet fuel. And none of them ever got sick with anything, except normal colds and flu and things like that. I was there 4 years and watched it happen for 4 years. In fact, I watched all my life. I lived on Air Force bases until I left home at 18. And I still know an awful lot of people in the Air Force who work around jet engines, jet fuel, on the flight lines, in the hangars, in the headquarters, all over the place. And when I talk to them about this, they just die laughing. They think it's the funniest thing they ever heard. None of their people are sick. They still get soaked with jet fuel when they work on the fuel systems and the jet engines. And guys in the hydraulic shop still get soaked with hydraulic fluid. Nobody's dropping dead from ethyl dibromide. Or anything else for that matter.
So what we have is a rumor. It's not based on fact, and it doesn't even follow logically.
No, not at all. And what about this guy Joe Burton who was sprayed? Did you hear this? Sprayed with a jet contrail, and was allegedly diagnosed with hepatitis A, rabies. Can you imagine this? Rabies? Guys walking around with rabies, Epstein-Barr, Flu 83, V2 gripe, and all of these things that I can't even pronounce, and then turpentine.
Well, let's see, Bill. I have been doing a little research on this. Of course, that story broke last Wednesday when Art Bell had a program, and the man read off with a so-called analysis from a man named Joe Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe he had just received that the same day, and he read it on the air the same day.
Mm-hmm.
What that tells me is he didn't check it out.
No, neither did Bell, did he? But that's not news. That's not news at all. I mean, nobody ever checks any of this stuff out except people like you and me. And a few others. There are a few others out there, folks, who do check things. Some of them listen to this broadcast and learn to do it here. Thank God.
Well, Bill, I have had a week to check it out.
Okay, go for it. I want to hear this.
I've got some information. More is coming in all the time.
Okay.
I have some top quality chemical researchers and medical researchers which are helping me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll start with one of the chemicals which we have identified, and it's called...
Good luck. I can't pronounce these things.
The way I would abbreviate it is DMG.
Okay.
And it's dimethylglycine.
Okay. N-dimethylglycine, right?
Right. We have found that this is a dietary supplement.
Okay. Actually, it's N-dimethylglycine hydrochloride, according to this.
Right. The only difference between the hydrochloride and the one that I'm going to speak about now is that that is a salt. The one I'm speaking about is a salt.
Uh-huh.
To make the difference between an acid and a salt is that you have mixed a base with it, and that brings the neutralizes the acid and turns it into a salt, which is used for a nutrient.
Uh-huh.
And it's available for sale, and they say it's actually good for someone who has immune system problems.
Oh.
If we were to take this, you would take one pill a day, and it enhances your immune response, basically.
Okay.
Now, that's the only chemical that I have much on, but I'm going to go back to this analysis.
Okay.
The analysis was originally for several chemicals and several different diseases.
According to this, this guy ought to be dead, especially if he's got rabies.
Well,
and hepatitis A ain't no walk in the park. Unless he's a carrier. If he's a carrier, then it wouldn't affect him.
True. What I found was that there's an awful lot of people that actually have the antibody, which shows that they have had past infection of hepatitis. In fact, the number is 33%.
But this doesn't say that he has the antibody. It says he has hepatitis A. Yeah. Well, if that's true, then they couldn't ever diagnose anybody with AIDS. Because AIDS attacks the autoimmune system, you wouldn't have an antibody. You see what I mean? And rabies? People don't survive rabies very often. You usually die from that.
Yes, unless it's treated rapidly, and once the symptoms actually appear, rabies is always fatal.
Yeah. Epstein-Barr. Flu 83. What in the world is V2 gripe?
V2 gripe. Well, the only thing I was able to find on that, gripe is the European word for flu.
Okay, so he's got two kinds of flu. Flu 83 and V2 flu.
Is that
right?
May not have had the flu. He may have had it in the past.
This is one sick dude.
No,
wait a minute. You can't interpret that. This says that he has V2 gripe. Doesn't say he had it in the past.
True.
Says he has flu 83, he has V2 gripe, he has Epstein-Barr, he has rabies, and he has hepatitis A, plus all of these long, weird chemical things that I have no idea what they are, except for the last one, turpentine. I know exactly what that is. Now, if he's a painter, or has been recently painting, he could have turpentine in his system.
That's true. And, the Epstein-Barr, most people don't realize that it's mononucleosis.
Hepatitis A, rabies, mononucleosis, flu 83, V2 flu, and all of this other stuff, plus turpentine. This guy's still walking around. Now, I don't interpret things that I read, especially if it's an analysis. If it says in the analysis that he has hepatitis A, then I have to assume that's what the analysis is telling me. It's not telling me that he had it in the past.
True. Well, actually, Bill, no analysis has come out. But an analysis...
I know that. I'm only, I'm using logic.
An analysis.
Oh, dear me. Slap me for using logic. My goodness gracious. And go ahead.
Okay, an analysis
Yes, it would.
Because when you come down, especially in your chemicals.
And it would have to say where this was detected, in the blood or in the tissue, and whether it was in the blood cells or in the blood serum and all this kind of stuff. And most blood analysis is just of serum anyway.
Well, this, as far as I know, this was not a blood analysis, but it's possible. It was called a full body scan.
Yeah, I went to that website. You know what I think it is? I think it's a full body scam. Spelled S-C-A-M. They put you under this machine, scans your body, and it tells you everything is wrong with you and what you got and what you don't have, and very convenient. Guy walks outside, a plane flies over with a contrail, he runs in, jumps under this machine, all of a sudden he's got hepatitis A, rabies, Epstein-Barr, flu 83, V2 flu, turpentine, mononucleosis, and a whole bunch of long chemical names here. Yeah, I saw that too, by mail, which means you don't even have to get near the machine. I also saw something else. They claimed, or at least it's intimated in the heading on the webpage, that they're connected with some legitimate institute of higher learning. And when you go through the whole thing, you find out that's not true at all. There's no connection whatsoever. Yes, and they are not at all.
No, and actually, they are located in South Carolina.
You know how I know? I called the Institute and asked them. And they said, absolutely not. Never heard of them. Don't know anything about them. Definitely not a part of their educational organization. Well, let's talk about some of this other. Let's talk about the contrails. Since everybody thinks contrails are poisoning them, let's find out what they are. Jay, what are contrails? How are they formed? And what do they do after they're formed?
Well, the answer to what are contrails is basically the same answer as what is rain? What is snow?
What are clouds? Yeah.
It's water. And the difference between a contrail and any other cloud, the only difference is that a contrail is formed by water, which comes from a jet engine. It's a byproduct of combustion. When you burn things, you actually do produce a certain amount of H2O, water.
Almost everything has at least a minute amount of water in it. Even if it's supposed to have been all the water taken out, even if it just sits around, normal condensation, if it's exposed to the air even for a little while, we'll put some water in it.
Not even just that, Bill. When you actually, in the combustion process, hydrogen and oxygen is a byproduct of the combustion itself.
Absolutely, it's water. Not only that, but these engines are taking in air that contains a lot of water already in vaporized form.
True, and so when this water comes out of the air, the jet engine, it's warm. It immediately hits very cold air, especially at high altitudes.
Now, we know from observation, I have never seen a contrail form at a low altitude. Now, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I'm just going to say, factually, that I have never seen a contrail at any kind of a low altitude, except one that was produced artificially by some acrobatic plane at an air show.
Well, Bill, they can form right on the ground. And the reason why I know this is, during this last month, there were airports closed in Alaska because they had a terrible cold wave. They had temperatures to 70 below zero.
And basically what was happening was the moisture coming out of the engines was causing a ground fog before.
That's true.
Yeah.
But
you see, I've never seen this, and I've lived on and around military bases and airports all my life. I've never been in an area where that's ever occurred, other than normal ground fog, which is not, as you know, caused by an airplane. So even though it may be able to occur, it's extremely rare.
As far as I know, Bill, the main determinant of contrail formation is temperature.
Sure.
And the magic number seems to be right around 40 degrees below zero.
Okay.
And so you could say in Montana, it gets that cold on the ground sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You could say it gets that cold maybe at 10,000 feet sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But generally, we're talking 5 miles, maybe a little higher.
Yeah, the normal contrail that normal people like me are used to seeing are pretty high up there.
Now, I've never worked with very many big jets, but I have to wonder how anyone would know the altitude that plane is flying.
Well, you can't. I mean, you can't unless you're on the plane or unless you call the local radar installation and ask them, and they probably wouldn't tell you. You know, what plane? What are you talking about? You know, they're looking at a whole bunch of planes. But you can tell that they're pretty high up there.
Yeah, in general, it's they fly at your 30,000 feet and up.
Yeah.
At least once they're cruising.
Sure.
So, the second reason why contrails form, besides freezing temperatures, is that the air needs to have some amount of water in it. You'll very seldom see a contrail after a cold front passes. The reason for that is that the air is dry. If you do get a contrail, it will evaporate very quickly, almost right behind the plane.
Uh-huh.
And I had a cold front come through the other day, and today we saw plane after plane with no contrails at all today. However, when that cold front was approaching, you could see it on the radar coming, and there were contrails all around.
Uh-huh. We see a lot of contrails here. We're way up in the mountains, and I guess a lot of moisture up there at that altitude, even if there's not a lot down here. And we seem to be under you'd call them highways in the air, air traffic corridors where planes always travel to and from certain destinations. And we have planes that pass from south to north, from south to northwest, from south to northeast. We have planes flying from east to west, and we see a lot of contrails. And it is true that contrails, under certain conditions, can linger and spread out and then become cirrus clouds, because I've seen that happen.
That's true, Bill. The reason why the contrails might stay around is if there's enough humidity. Contrail is actually ice crystals.
Uh-huh.
Small ice crystals down to the 10 or 20 micron sizes.
Now, once they begin to form, they can actually cause other crystallizations to form that would not otherwise have formed.
That's true. The air which is saturated might not have any clouds at all in it. But once you put a seed crystal out there, the seed crystals can attract more moisture. Then what happens? The crystals will grow. Eventually, they can get big enough to where they fall. The air cannot support them anymore.
And that's how they used to seed seeding the clouds, and they used to do it with iodide crystals, and cause this to happen under certain humid conditions, and try to make rain. Those were some of the earliest experiments in weather control.
And that's exactly the same phenomenon in natural clouds.
Well, sure. And you can watch the crystals begin to fall, and eventually they'll turn into rain as they reach the lower altitudes, and you'll get precipitation.
Either that, or quite often, they will evaporate on the way down.
Yeah, that can happen too. I can sit on my mountain here and watch rain begin to fall from a cloud, and you can see it coming down, the black lines in the sky coming down from the clouds, and they never hit the ground. They stop before they ever hit the ground, and I watch these clouds just drift across.
Well, I've done a certain amount of sailing myself, and there's an old sailor's rhyme. You know, they have one that's red sky at morning, sailors take warning.
Red sky at night, sailor's delight. Yes, I'm an old Navy man. I'm familiar with all of these things.
Well, there's another one, and it goes, mackerel skies and mare's tails.
Now, most people won't understand that, but what it means is that is a signal that you're going to have some high winds. And you don't want to have full sails set when high winds hit your ship.
And the mare's tails are the streaking in the sky from these ice crystals falling out of a cloud.
Yes.
Or out of a contrail.
Sure.
A contrail is really nothing more than a cloud. A man-made cloud.
Uh-huh. Not intentionally man-made, but nevertheless man-made.
That's right.
In fact, the Air Force would rather not make contrails. They don't want their planes to be seen.
Well, sure.
And if there's a contrail, all you have to do is follow it to one end or the other, and there's an airplane there.
That's true. And if it lingered for a long time, as they can do, it gives you a record of who's been flying in the past.
Yeah.
Even though they may be gone.
Now, what about this cobweb stuff?
Well, there's been reports of cobwebs. There's been reports of jello falling out of the sky.
There's even been reports of fish falling out of the sky.
Yes, frogs.
Documented. Proven. Not conjecture. Actual occurrences. But you see, when I was in the Navy, I remember one time when we were in the Pacific Ocean trying to dodge these squall lines that were coming at us, and so we were changing course quite often, and then all of a sudden found ourselves surrounded by 7 different tornadoes. Now, in the Navy, in the ocean, you call them water spouts, but they're just tornadoes over water, and when they hit the water, instead of bringing up dust and all this debris like they do when they hit the ground, when a tornado hits the ground, like in, say, Oklahoma or Kansas, out in the ocean, it pulls up this column of water. And whatever's in that water eventually is going to fall back down to Earth.
Well, the reports of cobwebs are real interesting, Bill. They go all the way back to Charles Darwin, and probably farther. But Darwin, as you remember, he sailed from England and went to the Pacific.
Uh-huh.
As he passed along the coast of South America, far offshore, he sighted cobwebs in the sky. He didn't see any contrails, though.
Yeah. You know, that's not unusual at all. When I was in the Navy, we were in the middle of the Indian Ocean. The Indian Ocean is a vast, huge ocean. We were dead in the middle of the Indian Ocean and had a sandstorm. So these things can occur in strange places. I mean, everybody was baffled and bewildered. Here we were in the middle of the Indian Ocean, hundreds and hundreds of miles from land, in the middle of a sandstorm. And I could tell you some other stories, but that's not the purpose of this broadcast. But it's just to let the listening audience know that unusual circumstances in unusual places are not rare. They happen. But go ahead with the cobwebs.
Okay, well, there was one fellow that I was able to contact who claimed to have seen cobwebs falling from a contrail. And his report mentioned that he saw 5 airplanes that had contrails ran inside the house and made a couple of phone calls.
Well, let's say something that's better than that. Let's say that he estimated the altitude without having any ability to do so. And he estimated 15,000 feet. And they actually could have been at any altitude.
That's right.
Okay. That's more accurate, probably.
Well, he went inside his house and spent 10 minutes on the telephone calling his friends to come and see, come and see. Then he went outside and he said he saw something fluttering down out of the sky. And he went over and collected it. He claimed that four days later, he was sick, and the material looked like cobweb or a fibrous material.
Uh-huh.
He said it was about 6 inches long, and it eventually disintegrated, he said, to where it's now only very small. Then put it into a container.
You know, people who say they see UFOs have been describing this phenomenon for a couple of centuries, actually. They claim that they see UFOs and the spiderweb stuff comes out of the UFOs. I just wanted to put that in there, to put this in perspective that...
It's true, Bill. I've seen those reports, and they use the word angel hair for that.
That's right. But nevertheless, when you ask them to describe it, it's the same thing you just said this guy described to you.
Well,
exactly.
I decided I was working on some insulation that one day, and I decided, hey, this looks like a fibrous material. So I took it up on top of the house, and I formed it into a piece that he said about 6 inches long. I dropped it off the house and counted how long it took and how far it fell to get to the ground.
Uh-huh.
I found it fell at 2 feet per second.
Okay.
Now, at 2 feet per second, if the plane dropped it at 10,000 feet, that would take 5,000 seconds to reach the ground.
Uh-huh.
1,000 divided by 2 is 5,000.
Uh-huh.
Well, 5,000 seconds is 83 minutes, Bill.
Yeah.
Not 10 minutes.
Well, this is one of the biggest discrepancies that with every claim that I've heard from people who say they saw a contrail in the sky at whatever altitude they said it was at, and then the contrail fell down on them and they got sick. And unless it was made out of BBs or lead or something, it couldn't have happened. And even if it was made out of BBs or lead, it would not have fallen straight down. It would have fallen in a direction that the wind was blowing.
Well, not even counting the wind, I measured that too. At a 5-mile-an-hour wind, it blew sideways at 2 feet per second too.
So, you know, it would not have fallen directly down on anybody who was standing directly under you. And 10 minutes later, they're sick.
Now, we
got to pause right here. So collect your thoughts, and we're going to pause right here and play some music. Why don't you, you know, if you've got to go get a drink of water or go to the bathroom or something, go ahead, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Okay? Okay, folks, you're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. And we're putting to rest all those nasty rumors about how you're being killed by contrails. Poo-poo. And it's just making some of these people so mad, they just called up and threatened my life. Well, by golly, I'm not a scared, I'm not afraid, I'm not terrified. The entire might of the federal government doesn't make me tremble. And you're not going to do it either.
over and I guess you thought I was all right. All right in the sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party?